convening the Subcommittee on Employee Relations Legislative Coordinating Commission meeting of dated January 28th. And welcome, everyone. And people are scattered about, so some of the members of the Senate have to come across and welcome, Senator. And just please come forward as you're able. And Senator Metzen's going to be coming and a couple more House members. So thank you for those of you that have showed up on time and being here. Maybe I'll hold off on the introductions, perhaps, because everybody's here. But I think the first order of business is actually election. We need to elect a chair from the House, and then a vice chair from the Senate, and then a secretary from the House Minority Caucus. So that's what we've done historically, and hopefully that works. Is there any nominations for chair for the Subcommittee on Employee Relations? Senator Metzen, welcome. Are you nominating yourself?
No, I want to say a clerk or something.
Representative Lilly, I'll nominate Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Any other nominations? Seeing none, I don't have to make a big speech, do I? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. I've been elected chair. From the Senate, the majority party, is there someone? Do we have a nomination? Senator Metzen, I think
I nominate Senator Metzen.
Okay, Senator Metzen's been nominated. Any other nominations? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Senator Metzen.
Thank you.
You can put that on your letterhead now. And any nominations for Secretary from the House Minority, Representative Pepin?
I nominate Representative Drazkowski.
Representative Drazkowski's been nominated. Any other nominations? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Drazkowski, you've been elected. And so we have our officers. And so I don't know if we want to start. Senator Benson, we're just going to kind of go around quick and just do an introduction.
Hi, State Senator Michelle Benson, District 31, just north of Blaine, reaching from Zimmerman all the way over to the 35W, 35E junction. And this is my second term on this committee.
Welcome. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Chamberlain, Senate District 38, 20 miles straight north, Lionel Lakes. First time on this committee.
Welcome. Senator Saxog.
Hi, Tom Saxog, representing Senate District 5. That includes Bemidji, Walker, Grand Rapids, and everything in between.
Senator Chris Eaton. I'm Senator Chris Eaton. I represent District 40, Brooklyn Center, in the southern half of Brooklyn Park. And this is, I was on the second half of last session and this session.
Yeah, Senator Jim Metzen from District 52, which is down the road about 6-7 miles, and South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, Sunfish Lake, Amber Grove Heights, and that's 78,000 people, whatever it is.
And former chair.
Former chair.
And welcome. Mr. Hubinger, can you introduce yourself?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I help staff this subcommittee.
Great. Mr. Marks?
I am Mark Shepard from the House Research Department.
Sorry. Blew that one. Representative Winkler.
Ryan Winkler from Golden Valley. I represent parts of Golden Valley, St. Louis Park, Plymouth, and the entire community of Medicine Lake.
Deborah Hillstrom. I represent all of the city of Brooklyn Center and parts of Brooklyn Park, District 40B.
Steve Drazkowski, District 21B, portions of Wabasha, Goodhue, Winona, and Dodge counties.
Joyce Pepin, representing District 34A, Rogers, Dayton, and part of Maple Grove.
And Sally?
Sally Olson, I'm a commission assistant with the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Well, thank you, everyone, and welcome. The next item on the agenda is adoption of the subcommittee's rules. And Mr. Hubinger, can you go through those, please?
Mr. Chair and members, in your packet is a set of the proposed rules for this biennium. They're the same as that we had in the last biennium. They basically recite what's in the statute in terms of the subcommittee's duties. Two things to point out to you. First, that officers serve for two-year terms, so they'll serve for the entire biennium. And the other is the voting requirement. The subcommittee does not act like a conference committee, but like a regular committee. So voting requires a majority of those present to take action.
Any questions on the House rules for the subcommittee? So, Representative Winkler, will you move the rules?
Mr. Chair, I'll move adoption of the rules that are unmarked, but not titled, but the rules in our packets.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The rules have been adopted. Okay, so we have like to adopt the minutes from the August 30th meeting. They're in our packet. I don't know that has anybody, Senator Metzen, you've had a chance to
I'll
get a peek at them. And any questions in regards to those minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes have been adopted. Well, thank you, guys. You guys are helpful. So on our agenda today, I'm going to pass this to to Mr. Hubinger, and he can probably talk us through and say where we need to go for this meeting. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, members, the subcommittee has five labor contracts in front of it, two that were rejected by the subcommittee last August, and then three contracts that have been negotiated since that time. Ms. Holmes from the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget is much more aware of the provisions in these contracts than I am, so it might be more appropriate for her to do a brief overview of them.
Ms. Holmes, please introduce yourself. We have some new members in the committee, and just kind of maybe just a brief overview of how things work and why you're where we're at and where we go from here.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Barbara Holmes. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Labor Relations at Minnesota Management and Budget. One of my duties is to be the negotiator, chief negotiator of the state labor contracts along with my staff. As Mr. Hubinger has stated, there are five labor contracts in front of you today for approval and two compensation plans. MMB is responsible for negotiating and administering nine collective bargaining agreements and two compensation plans. We do not negotiate anything related to MNSCU faculty or administrators. They have separate negotiators for that. Of the nine collective bargaining agreements that we negotiate, we have ratified agreements with five of the unions. We also have tentative agreements with two other unions, and those contracts aren't before you today because their members are still voting on those. That's the nurses' contract and the radio control operators' contract. And then there are two of the unions that we have yet to reach tentative agreement with, and that is the Minnesota Government Engineers Council and the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association. Today, we're going to be looking at the AFSCME agreement, the MAPE agreement, and I'm also going to include in my presentation, because they're very similar, the agreement with the Middle Management Association that covers supervisors in state government, the agreement with the State Residential Schools Education Association. These are special teachers that work primarily in the Perpich Center for the Arts, the Faribault Academies for the Deaf and Blind, and in the Department of Corrections and Department of Human Services. And the other contract before you today is the contract with the Correctional Officers Bargaining Unit. We have the managerial plan and the commissioner's plan. I'll talk about those a little bit later. Basically, there are miscellaneous language provisions that we've changed. There is the wage portion of the contract, and then there are the insurance provisions. There really weren't a lot of significant changes in the language provisions. all of the collective bargaining agreements and the plans. For instance, we clarified a lot of different parts of the language that we may have. We had no disagreement about what it meant, but sometimes in the heat of negotiations, we don't write the best. So when the people who have to use it on a day-to-day basis need it clarified, and we clarified a lot of things, updated, made a lot of changes. An example of some of the, and they're essentially minor language changes. We clarified that when an employee moves from the judicial branch to the legislative branch or the executive branch or wherever they move, that their vacation and sick leave goes with them. It would have been not this past legislative session, but I think even further ago, we're a little behind on our contract, so I can't remember exactly when it was passed, but the legislature passed a statute that expanded the ability of employees to take paid leave to go and vote in state or federal elections, so we had to make some changes to the contract about that. All of the collective bargaining agreements and the plans have a provision in it for employees to contribute tax-free dollars to a medical and dental expense reimbursement account. The federal law has changed governing that sort of stuff, so we had to adjust the maximum that they could contribute to that down from $5,000 to $2,000. There were more changes in the insurance article. The state employee group insurance program, we use the acronym CGIP. It covers employees not only in these contracts and plans, but in all of state governments. So you, your employees in the legislature, the judicial branch, and a number of other entities are covered by this plan, and the same terms apply to everyone. They don't vary by bargaining unit or between branches. There were a few changes that we had to make in the insurance articles due to the Federal Affordable Care Act. I think the most significant change in the insurance article had to do with the coverage of children of employee up to the age of 26. It expanded what we had in our contract before that. The major substantive changes in the insurance plan had to do with shifting some of the costs that are normally paid by the employer, shifting some of those costs to the employees. Specifically, employees will now, the amounts were increased for the annual first dollar deductible amount for co-pays for office visits, emergency care, hospital care, outpatient surgery, co-insurance for the lab and x-ray services and for MRIs was increased, and the out-of-pocket non-drug maximum expense amount was increased, as were the prescription drug co-pays. The total savings for those cost shifts to the employees amounted to about, and again, this is state government-wide, amounted to about $7.9 million. The wage increases for all of these collective bargaining agreements are the same. They provide for an across-the-board wage increase of 2% that would be effective retroactive to January 2nd of this year. So there is no across-the-board increase in 2012, and simply it's the only across-the-board increase is going to be that 2% in the last 6 months of the contract. So we were coming off of fiscal year 10-11 with no across the board, again, none in 12, and only one for the 6 months. There are step increases in the collective bargaining agreement, and what a step increase is every bargaining unit has a salary schedule, and it has multiple levels of pay that employees progress through over the course of their career. And those multiple levels are called steps. The percentage amount for each step varies by labor contract. They range from a 2.7% step increase for AFSCME contracts up to a 4% step increase for contracts like the nurses contract. An employee advances to the next step in their salary range on an annual basis if they have satisfactory performance and if they're not at the top of their salary range. And when you look at state employees on a whole, About 50% of them are eligible for these step increases because the rest of them have been here a number of years and have advanced to the top of their salary schedule. The step increases are provided in both years of the contract. They're a permanent part of the contract. If we ever wanted to take them out, we would have to have they have to be negotiated out with agreement of the union. They are different than an across-the-board increase. They're intended not to address inflation or other sorts of cost of living increases. What step increases are intended to address are the fact that with the passage of time, there is increased skill and an efficiency that an employee gains, and thus they are compensated for that. In the commissioner and managerial plans, and let me talk a little bit about who those plans cover first. The managerial plan, and we call them plans because they're not negotiated labor contracts. The managerial plan covers everyone who's in a managerial classification in state government. The commissioner's plan, and in the managerial plan, there are about 1,300 employees. The commissioner's plan is sort of it's a confusing name for a compensation plan that applies to kind of, I guess my professional term is mishmash of different employee groups. It doesn't cover commissioners, first of all. The commissioner in the commissioner's plan really refers to the commissioner of MMB. The sort of employees that are covered by the commissioner's plan are those who aren't covered by a collective bargaining contract. And so that is going to include employees in human resource jobs, in labor relation jobs. It includes classified employees in the office of the legislative auditor, compensation judges, administrative law judges, employees who don't work enough time to be included in a bargaining unit. There is one bargaining unit that has never sought to be represented by a union, and that bargaining unit is covered under the commissioner's plan and includes dentists, pharmacists, veterinarians. Also, employees of the Bureau of Mediation Services are covered by the commissioner's plan, as are DNR enforcement supervisors and Department of Public Safety patrol supervisors. The other two groups of employees that are covered are physicians and attorneys. In the commissioner and managerial plan, they also will be getting what's before you is a 2% increase that's effective January 2nd of this year. But the commissioner and managerial plans don't have a step system built into their wage, their compensation plan. They don't have the steps. We simply have a minimum that a job class can be paid and a maximum that they can be paid. And so the mechanism that we use that's analogous to the step increase is called a performance increase. The way the performance increase language was written in the last contract, it was date specific to 2009 and 2010. Step increases, on the other hand, in the past contract were simply denoted as to be given annually. There was not a date. So when 2012 rolled around, the employees who were covered by collective bargaining agreements could get their step increases. But because of the language in the plan, there wasn't something that authorized it for 2012. Again, we're kind of behind on our negotiation schedule. So employees were not able to receive a performance increase analogous to a step in 2012. This plan provides for a step increase or a performance increase in 2012 and 2013 to match what the employees that are under collective bargaining agreements get. That step increase is a little bit different in the bargaining agreements. It is a strict percentage. So in the AFSCME contracts, it is a 2.7% step, and that's what everybody gets. In the commissioner and managerial plan, the proposal before you allows agencies to give up to 3.5%. They don't have to give the full 3.5%. They can choose to give some of the highest performers, you know, 3.5, and the people who are still performing well but not at the highest level, they could give them 2%. An agency, if they don't have enough money to give these performance increases, doesn't have to give them at all. So they have a lot more of a discretionary characteristic to them. I think that you have been provided with the financial data on Mr. Hubinger's sheet that shows what the additional costs are for each contract for these changes.
Does everybody have that? That'd be the last page probably in your the packet. Thank you. Sorry, Ms. Holmes.
So I think we're all looking at, yeah, the very small print page. It will show you again for each bargaining unit that we've completed what the cost of living increase is, the 2%. It will show you what the biennial base salary, total compensation salary was for the past biennium, and then how much the changes that we've made in the contract this time around, what the new biennial money is. The last two numbers, these are numbers that that address the first number, the 1.34% for AFSCME, that addresses the increase in cost for the biennium. The next number, the 4.73%, addresses the cost of the contract as it impacts the next biennium. And the reason those are different numbers, the easiest explanation is to talk about the performance increase. Not the performance increase, excuse me, to talk about the across-the-board increase that just occurs in the last 6 months of the contract. For that reason, its impact on this biennium is smaller than its impact will be on the next biennium because the 2% will apply throughout the next 2 years also. So that's the difference in those two numbers, and I think the costs are self-explanatory.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes. I'm noticing I'm needing readers now, looking at these numbers all the time, not just once in a while. So I guess at this point I'd like to entertain a motion for SER1 and then to have discussion on the first group of contracts. Now, the SER1 includes there's five different groupings there you can see. Does everybody have a copy of it? I'll wait till everybody has it. And Representative Hillstrom, would you make that motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the SER1.
Thank you. And so we have the SER1 before us. Is there any questions in regards to these contracts? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call vote on these. Can I request for?
Yes, roll call has been requested.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holmes, back in August, we had a resolution that passed the SER committee, and the two areas that we really focused on were the fact that we weren't having employees take responsibility for even a single percent of their health insurance premium costs, and it was recognized in the resolution that the administration actually in its first round of negotiations brought forward a 10% employee premium responsibility, even realizing the private sector is somewhere around 20 or 30% on average. So it appears the way I gather, we're coming forward with the same proposals that were not approved last time, so we're coming forward with proposals in which the government continues to pay for 100% of the premium for employee health insurance for their single coverage. Is that correct?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, yes, this is the AFSCME and MAPE contract are exactly, they are the same contracts that were before you in August.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Holmes, and just I guess maybe this is more of a comment than a question. Just reviewing, too, we also asked that we don't go with the across-the-board salary increases, and I see that, and that we actually put forward a more rigorous approach to performance in a performance-based salary increase system. And I see that not only, obviously, the two contracts that were brought forward from the table back in August, but also the additional proposals that came forward and were negotiated also have across-the-board increases in them. And so it appears that the approach by the administration and the additional negotiating that has happened has relapsed, if you will, back into the approach in which we do provide across-the-board increases without those more rigorous performance standards. Also would be curious, the third point that we talked
Ms.
about.
Holmes, do you want to answer them as they go, or do you want to?
That was, Mr. Chair, that was more of a comment. I didn't really, okay. Unless Ms. Holmes wants to respond. But the question here would be the third bullet relate that we had in the resolution really related to trying to develop going forward an assurance from the unions that they wouldn't be using some of these additional increases that our state employees were getting in these contracts to contribute to increased union dues. And so I'm curious, Ms. Holmes, in any of these contracts before us, are there any proposals from the unions to use a portion of the employee increases to continue to fund the union infrastructure and the political contributions that those organizations bring in large amounts to particular candidates and parties?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, the way the Public Employee Labor Relations Act is written is we have absolutely nothing to do with union dues. What the union charges, what they spend it on, that's simply between the exclusive representative and its members. So there's nothing in these contracts that has anything to do with union dues.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holmes, are you aware, aside from that, are you aware if any of the unions have pending dues increases before them, any of these unions that we're discussing approving here today?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I believe that the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees implemented a dues increase, I think, at the beginning of the year.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's more of a general comment. I wasn't here last year, and I'm not here to rehash this whole thing. I know it's been taken care of, and we've been down that road. But just a couple of comments. And we all agree that our public employees should have some pay increases, some comp increases. But, you know, when I look at, we still have $1 billion shortfall in the state budget. We a lot of uncertainty in the global economy, the national economy. A lot of it. We've just gone through the MMB forecast, and that again indicates that we have a lot of underemployed and discouraged workers that have dropped out of the employment grid. I have neighbors like that, private sector. Sluggish growth. And I got an email just the other day from a lady who said she hasn't received an increase in 3 years in her job, and her husband's only received a 1% increase in the last 2 years. So I would think that it'd be great to have a salary increase, but some of these compensation levels are 5 to 9%, depending on how you calculate it. And when I look at the private sector and the uncertainty in the world out there, I think it's pretty risky business that we would offer 5 to 9% for our public employees when we could go back and target, as Representative Drazkowski has said and others have discussed in the past, target raises and find some other ways to compensate our public employees in the short term until the economy recovers and we have the private sector back on its feet. We're still in recovery. We're still fragile. And it's just hard to see this go through. I know it's a fait accompli here, but for the record, we want increases. But the way to get the pay increases for the public employees is to get the state back on sound ground, fiscal ground, and make sure these economies are solid before we start committing to multiple billions of dollars over the next many years for these contracts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman.
Yeah. Senator Chamberlain, is it to this? Because I have others with questions. Senator Metzen.
I just got to comment that, Senator Chamberlain, these people have not had a boost since 2008, which is, what, how many years ago is that? And I don't think you can blame the workers on the mismanagement of the state budget. I think you could blame the legislature, and there's a lot of blame to go around, but they're not the ones doing the budget. We are the ones that do that. So anyway, it goes back to 2008, and this is a modest increase of 2%. These people deserve this modest increase.
Thank you, Senators. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Holmes, for coming today. Actually, now, after listening to Senator Metzen, I do have a question, because he said they haven't had any increase, and that's not matching up to what I'm seeing at the last page. I'm guessing it's probably a step increase that they did get, but I would consider that an increase, too. Maybe you could clarify that, and I do have one question that I had before that. Have they not gotten, Senator Metzen, you said they haven't had an increase since 2008. Could you clarify that for me?
That's what I've been told.
Let's go with Ms. Holmes. And
that was the last across-the-board increase in 2008.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, I'm looking at some of my numbers, and I believe that the last across-the-board was in fiscal 2009. I am seeing a 3.25%, but in fiscal 2010 and fiscal 11, there was no across-the-board increase. There was no across-the-board increase in fiscal 12 and the first 6 months of fiscal 13. So we're looking at 3.5 years.
So, Ms. Representative Pepin, does that...
Right, so some of the employees got an increase. It's just not all of the employees got an increase.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I don't...
Step increases I'm talking about.
Approximately 50% of the employees would have received one step increase in the fiscal 2010-11. They didn't get step increases in both years. We also took away a step increase.
Okay.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, this is my first time in this committee, and I'm just wondering kind of the methodology. If you could kind of run me through how the agreement comes together and how we settle upon the numbers that we get. I know it's a broad question, but I am kind of curious as to how we arrive at these numbers, because I have some of the concerns that Senator Chamberlain had with kind of what's going on in the private sector, and I'm just curious as to how we arrive at the numbers here.
Ms. Holm, just a quick comment before we get going too far. I think part of the reason I asked to be on this committee and then asked to be chair is it's a little bit of I think it's out of respect to the process. So some of the questions that are, that we might hear today, I hope that folks are serving on the committees. Like last year, Representative Draskowski and I and Representative Winkler were on stake of finance, so you had an opportunity to ask a lot of these questions on the contracts and to actually impact them. Today I'm really hoping, the kind of like the way the committee is set up is pretty much, I hate to say it, almost a rubber stamp sort of thing, but to move the contracts forward, then the next steps will be to have these contracts to go before us as legislators. So we're going to get quite a few bites of the apple at this, both in the Senate and the House. And I'm still going to give you a chance to have your questions, but I just hope that you know that it's going to go. We're going to be before the Jobs Committee, on Wednesday. And then we have State Gov Finance, and then we have Ways and Means on the House side. And I'm not sure of the path on the Senate side, but I would imagine it'll be multiple bites of the apple. So, and but I'm happy to hear questions. And but at some point we're going to have to move forward and then be legislators more so, and let the governor negotiate with the workers. So,
Mr. Chair, Holmes.
Yes,
sure. With all due respect, and I think you're a good legislator and an awfully nice guy. But with all due respect, I didn't run for the legislature to be a rubber stamp. And this is the first time I've been on it, and I just kind of need to understand the methodology and the process. And I actually have to leave here in a minute, but I'm sorry, I kind of take offense to that comment, because I think it's our job here to every step of the way to ask questions, and I think we have to be really cognizant of that. It is our job to make sure that everybody here understands the process, asks a lot of questions, and make sure that we're providing a good value for the taxpayers of the state.
Thank you, Representative Pepin. I actually am giving you maybe the softball opportunity in these committees to really go after the bill and to shape, you know, the negotiation with in other ways as legislators. I'm not I'm just not sure, looking at our, you know, the way this committee is set up, that we have that full breadth to actual. I'll pass this down to you, but I'm not sure really it's purview to some of what we do, but Ms. Holmes, I probably made it worse and probably would have been done, but please answer Representative Pepin's question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, do you want to know a little bit more about the bargaining process and how we go about negotiating the wage portion, or do you want to know about the actual numbers and where we come up with the actual numbers? Or both?
Representative Pepin.
I think kind of both. I mean, I just see numbers in front of me and a certain percentage, and I understand that they were negotiated, and I'm just kind of understanding, usually in a negotiation completely removed from here, one party starts here, and they meet somewhere here. And I don't mean that you need to get specific. I'm just having, I just want a little better understanding of where the two sides started out, that we arrived at the numbers we did.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, the number portion is the first thing we have to determine is what is the base salary number that we're working off. And actually, it's not just the salary. It's the base total compensation number for a particular bargaining unit. So the cost of salaries, salaries of insurance, of retirement, of the FICA taxes that we have to pay, we figure out what that base is at the beginning of negotiations. And then the various provisions that we negotiate that have a financial impact, the 2% across the board, the steps, any other provisions that we might agree to that have a direct financial impact that we can estimate, we have a costing model that costs those things for each bargaining unit so that we come up with what you see on this chart as the biennial new money. And that's essentially how the process is. In terms of the actual negotiation, yes, you're right. We go in with a proposal. The union comes in with a proposal. We go back and forth until we figure out something that we can agree to, and it took us a long time this round to get to that point. It's a very difficult biennium to negotiate labor contracts in for a number of reasons.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I might have some more specific questions for you offline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I'll get in touch with you, and we can set up a time when I can sit down and you can ask me everything you wanted to know.
And just be clear to members, she's available for questions, and you've been great. MMV has been great for that, and will continue to be, I would expect. Mm-hmm. And Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Holmes. And we had spoken earlier about looking at market forces, and this contract doesn't reflect any market evaluation. There's no increased payments for where there are wage gaps between the public and private sector. And I was wondering if you could take a couple of moments and explain to me why we're spreading this money like peanut butter instead of applying it where the state needs the most support to keep the best people so we can build the government we need to go forward.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, first of all, we are a collective bargaining state, so the executive branch, the governor, can't choose to put money in each class without the agreement of the unions. We have to agree with the employees. And historically, the sort of compensation structure that we have and the bargaining approach that we have does tend to make for a more a uniform approach to compensation and increases. We do have some procedures internally at MMB with the unions where a certain job class can, the unions can bring a particular job class forward that they believe does not have an equitable salary, and they often bring in market data, or in response to their request, we turn around and gather our own market data, and we look at raising, we look at whether an increase is justified. Sometimes our agencies come to us, and they have particular job classes that they have difficulty hiring for, and we attempt to make some adjustments where we have the authority to do. One of the things that's happening in MMB is we are changing the way we do our compensation work so that we can have a couple of positions dedicated to looking at market data out there and seeing where we match up and where we don't and how it's impacting us. It's something that, yes, I know that you raised and that we would like to do more of it, and everyone seems to have an interest in it, so we will be doing more of it.
And if I may...
Senator Benson.
Follow up, I'm glad that you're considering more market input into the salary schedules, but if I understand correctly, the unions have to approve whatever the administration would do. Is that correct?
Ms. Holmes.
There's never, Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, there's not, there are all sorts of exceptions, but generally, yes, that's true. The unions have to approve. We have some flexibility in establishing some of the salary ranges and doing some things, but for the most part, certainly the major wage increase are subject to negotiation.
Okay, and if I just one more.
Senator Benson, go ahead.
Ms. Holmes, could you help me with how many vacation days can be accrued and carried forward and how many sick days can be accrued and carried forward, even with just the ASME and MAPE contracts? I know we get into some of the other contracts, and it could be variable.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Benson, for most of the plans and collective bargaining agreements, there is a cap on vacation, so that if you, and it's around the 250 to 275 hours. So once a year, an employee has to get their balance down below the cap, and the cap varies from bargaining unit to bargaining unit, but that's about the range. So they have to get that amount down once a year, or they will lose the excess. Okay, sick leave, there is not a cap on sick leave.
Senator Benson, any further?
No, thank you for the indulgence, Mr. Chair.
To everyone, Representative Drazkowski, maybe you can pass it to Representative Pepin. I want to apologize. I didn't realize she was leaving so quick, and you know, I certainly would have wanted her to have more questions answered if she wanted them, so my apologies. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it is too bad Representative Pepin left, because I could promise her that you're certainly not a rubber stamp. At least not on the hockey rink, from my observation from last night. Ms. Holmes, just a quick reminder for us, and I don't know if you can kind of aggregate this, but how much did state employees lose when state government shut down in the summer of 2011?
Ms. Holmes,
the follow-up, sorry. Yes. Is that total, is that included in this biennial base calculation?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, approximately 19,000 state employees were laid off for approximately 3 weeks in the summer of the shutdown and lost a total of $65 million. This 2% increase that's being given in these contracts in no way comes close to making up for that for those employees who were laid off during the shutdown.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of follow-up comments here. First of all, you know, we have different philosophies on how you compare public and private sector employees, but if you it is well settled that if you consider the experience, number of years, and the education of state workers, they actually make a little bit less than people do in the private sector. They did lose far more than they are getting, the state workers did, because of the shutdown, which is our fault. If the contracts came in smaller increases, it would save the state of Minnesota no money because it doesn't change the amount of appropriations that we are given to the agencies, so the taxpayers wouldn't see any money that's coming back. And as to the point about market forces, and I don't have a site for you ready, but I just read recently that as a share of gross domestic product, corporate profits are at a record high and wages are at a record low. And so if we want to mimic the private sector in public contracts, we can. And if we want to, you know, sort of feed on some resentment about public employees, we can, although I think that's a misperception. We can, but in my mind, we should be more interested and more focused on trying to bring the private sector wages and benefits up rather than trying to bring everybody down to these record lows that wages are at now. So I think these are very, very modest contracts. It doesn't even begin to address the loss that workers have had. And I hope, Ms. Holmes, that your negotiating skills decline in the next contract and workers do a little bit better.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, to that point briefly.
Yes, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Winkler. My point about the private market was we're having trouble hiring programmers that we need to get our systems up to speed and peanut butter spread all over the state workforce is not the best application of limited resources. And that's what I was implying. I wasn't asking for a race to the bottom. I was asking for the best application and the liberty for the administration to put the money where it would be most effective in moving us forward.
Thank you both. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Winkler, maybe Ms. Holmes, I'm going back to Representative Winkler's discussion about the shutdown. Yeah, I'm curious, was there any provision in the contracts, Ms. Holmes, that says if government shuts down that anybody is entitled to any money if they don't bring forward work at that time? And then the follow-up question would be, is there anything in the contract in the future, should the government shut down again over the next biennium or during the period of the contract, that suggests that people should be paid during which they don't work?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, there is nothing in those labor contracts regarding what you just said.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
It would become very apparent to me then, Mr. Chair, that nothing was lost. Simply there was not an execution of a contract of labor exchanged for payment during that time because the government was shut down. And it appears that we've got the same conditions going forward should the government shut down again. I would also point out the discussion about public sector pay that I read, Representative Winkler, is quite a bit different. The Minnesota Taxpayers Association study tells us that 75% of the job classifications are paid an amount of 5% or more in total compensation above the private sector. So that's very much different from what you articulated. I would have a question, Mr. Chair, if I could, and then I'll be done and I'll shut up, I promise.
Go ahead. Please ask your question. Representative Drazkowski.
And that is, Ms. Holmes, help me understand the amount of commitment in terms of resources. What is the cost going to be to the taxpayers of Minnesota in the next biennium for each of these seven agreements?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I do not have the dollar amount. The closest that I can come right now, I can get that for you. I certainly can get it for you, but is to look at that last column on the right side of the settlement sheet that talks about the percentage increase going into the next biennium. I don't have a dollar figure, though. Or Mr. Hubinger might be able to calculate that for you.
I haven't done that.
Yeah. I'll give you. Representative Draskowski, you can have more questions.
Well, I mean, that's really my question, Mr. Chair. I'm curious of what are we committing in terms of the biennial budget ahead of us, the decision ahead of us. Amount of taxpayer resources are we committing to with these contracts?
Representative Draskowski, I would, and Ms. Holmes, can someone put that together, please? And I would think that as we go forward through the committee process, that'll be a question that'll be asked. So someone's going to get that?
Yeah, we can do that.
We'll work together on that.
I just needed a couple nods or something. Is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Hillstrom moved SER 1. There's been a roll call we requested. Mr. Hubinger.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Draskowski?
No.
Representative Hillstrom?
Aye.
Representative Pepin? Representative Winkler?
Aye.
Senator Benson?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Metzen?
Yes.
Senator Saxhog?
Yes.
SER 1 passes 6-3. With that, I'd like to entertain a motion for SER 2 for the which includes the commissioner's plan.
Sure.
And the managerial plan. Senator Metzen. Senator Eaton, sorry.
I'd like to move the SER 2.
Senator Eaton has moved SER 2. Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just like to request roll call.
Roll call has been requested, and we'll do that. Any other questions on regards to SER 2? Seeing none, roll's been called. So, Mr. Hubinger.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Draskowski?
No.
Representative Hillstrom?
Aye.
Representative Pepin? Representative Winkler?
Aye.
Senator Benson?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Metzen?
Yes.
Senator Saxhog?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. SER 2 passes 6-3. Well, thank you, everyone, for a meeting, and you can have more bites of the apple as this bill moves through the House and the Senate. With that, we are adjourned.
You'll never know it.